As you know, now this is a mystery of the Rosary, this mysterion of the Transfiguration. What is a mystery? You see, it's an act of God in our dimensions, in our historical dimensions, that reveals something of God. Every act of Jesus is a mystery in that sense. It's what the theologians call a theanderic act, from theos and anir, which means a God-man act. Therefore, it has an infinite depth. And when the church celebrates this kind of a feast, you see, the readings are taken in order to bring us, as far as we're willing to go, into the mystery, so that this reality of Jesus touches us, changes us, makes us different. And so, that's true every day, but at a big feast day, like today, you see. And you can see from the prayer and from the readings that we celebrate this reality in the life of Jesus and the life of these three disciples for two reasons. One, so that we really realize how glorious Jesus is, and we're not discouraged or frightened by all the apparent force of darkness. It won't last. Jesus is radiant with the divinity. The other reason, as we already hinted at in the prayer, is so that we're encouraged. That's where we're going. Our bodies will shine like that. That's the normal state of a human being. Because even if you measure it by time, we're here 70, 80, whatever years, then we go spend eternity with God forever. That's the more normal state. And so the radiance of our bodies, the clarity, that's normal. And we live in an abnormal state, like Jesus did before the resurrection. And so the church picks these texts, you see, to help us enter into the mystery. We can't spend all day, but it would be nice. You know, we have this text from Daniel, and we have the witness from 2 Peter, and then we have Matthew's account, though there's one also in Mark and Luke, as you know. This vision of the Son of Man. This is Jesus' favorite title for himself. Even in the Gospel today, don't tell the vision to anyone until the Son of Man is risen from the dead. Now this Son of Man, in one way, it means the quintessential man, a quintessential human being, Semitic people talk like that. I remember in that war, Sudan Saddam Hussein said, "This is the mother of all battles." It's a way of talking. So, Jesus is the most human of all human beings. He is the Son of Man. In that sense, he's our son. But he's also that one who embodies in himself, you see, all that it means to be human. Now, there's another dimension to this, the one we have here in Daniel. One mysterious figure, the text says here, you see, one like a Son of Man. coming to the Ancient of Days. His clothing was bright as snow, his hair, his head white as wool. His throne was flames of fire, trying to give us some sort of an idea of the reality that surrounds us. And then one like a son of man, coming on the clouds of heaven. And when he reached the Ancient One and was presented before him, the one like a son of man received dominion, glory, and kingship. All peoples, nations, and languages serve him. That's now. The vision, you see, is of the Son of Man in his glory. But he's also the Son of Man. He's proud of being a man. He's happy to be one of us. He wants to be one of us. But he wants to draw us out of the preoccupations and fears and whatever that weigh us down into a state of greater normality, aware of God. You know, there was a famous monk, Saint Seraphim of Sarov, Russian, great holy man, lived out in the great Russian forest most of his life, and then came back to the monastery toward the end of his life. And a very devout newspaper man, there were such at one time, went to interview him. And so he's talking to Seraphim. And finally he said, "Father Seraphim, what is the meaning of life?" At that moment, Seraphim's face became so bright and so radiant that the reporter couldn't look at him. And Seraphim said, the meaning of life, the goal of life, is to acquire the Holy Spirit. Very beautiful when you think of it. And the word in Russian, they say, is a commercial term, to acquire. It's to acquire the Holy Spirit. Well, we only acquire the Holy Spirit because he's given to us. And so, that's the first meaning of this mystery, is who is Jesus Christ? One like a son of man, who has received from the Father dominion, glory, and kingship. All peoples, nations, and languages serve him. Now they serve. Don't be distracted by the apparent triumph of evil. It doesn't last. It doesn't last. Then we have this witness in the letter to Peter. I don't mind taking a little time because it's Saturday, but it's to help us be touched and changed by this mystery, the radiance of Jesus. It's this radiant body that we're going to receive. And if things were normal, we'd all come away from this table shining. We've just received the body and blood of the eternal Son of God, which is radiant and beyond imagination. Okay. And so he witnesses to this. Honor. He received honor and glory from God the Father. And that unique declaration, "This is my beloved Son." A glimpse into the life of the Trinity. The way the Father takes infinite pleasure in his Son from all eternity. And then sends him to earth and tells us, "There, that's my beloved Son. From all eternity, I am pleased with them, and he with me." And then finally, the exhortation. You see, we possess the prophetic message that is altogether reliable. That's pretty good, isn't it? It's the gospel. The gospel. I mean, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, yeah, sure. But was a rabbinic exercise. One rabbi would say to another, "Recite the whole law while you stand on one foot." Meaning, give me a resumation, or a resumation is not the English word, is it? Summation of the law. So you see here, give me the gospel. God became man, suffered and died, so that we could be transformed and be with him forever. That's the gospel. That's the good news. This is not our normal state. Okay. Now you would do well to be attentive to it. Think about it. When was the last time you were driving along in the car and started to think about heaven? You know, we're here a couple of years. We're in heaven forever. Now this is very important, this life we live. But it's the antechamber. So that when we will shine like Jesus forever, you will do well to be attentive to it as to a lamp shining in a dark place until day dawns and the morning star rises in your hearts. And the morning star rises in your hearts when faith becomes that powerful. When you are transformed into Christ, you see, then there is no night. Sure, the sun goes down, we go to bed, but there is no night. It's all radiance. That's what the great saints call transforming union. And we're all going there. It's just a question of whether we're going to let the Lord do it in this life, whether he's got to do it in the next. But that's our goal. Which is, I say, the other dimension of the transfiguration. Who was with Jesus? The law and the prophets. Moses and Elijah. You see. And they're there. In Luke, he tells us they are discussing his exodus. His getting out of this world, going to the next. And then Jesus says, don't tell anybody about this. Until the Son of Man has been raised from the dead. Now we can tell everybody how glorious, how beautiful he is. Just look at the book of Revelation, the first chapter. He's there. You know, he's radiant and shining and beautiful, and he still bears the marks of his death among us. He'll never give that up. That's the cherished part of his time among us. He suffered, and he carries that with him for all eternity. And now it's radiant and glorious. That'll be for us too. That'll be for us too. Let's spend some time today, you see, reflecting on this, praying, saying, Jesus, transform me, transfigure me. My body, whenever you want, put my spirit now. Get sin out of my life. Let me bear your radiance so that I can share it.